Hello, citizens of the comedy film nerd universe. Never addressed them that way before.
No. Alert.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, this is emergency.
This is not a drill.
This is not a drill, you guys. We're going to talk about some really horrible movies this week.
Yes.
Buckle up for some really bad films.
Now You See Me 2, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, although a couple of interesting ones, Tickled, Wiener, and we'll talk about the Legend of Tarzan trailer and some DVDs, 10 Cloverfield Lane, London Has Fallen, and a couple special picks that Graham and I will get into later.
Yeah. Chris, the air conditioning's on.
Oh my gosh, we got to shut that off.
Yeah,
hold on.
Get that shut down. Boy, we didn't prepare anything. It's not like this is our 325th episode. We're a third of the way to 975. I think when we get to 975, we'll have it figured out.
Maybe.
Doubtful.
So, We want to thank everybody who came out to the screenings over at the SF Doc Fest, Indie. It has like three different names.
Well, the SF Indie Fest
is the parent company.
Yeah, they control all the doc. You know, they control a lot of festivals in San Francisco. So this was their San Francisco Doc Fest, which was really cool. We had two screenings up there. Mike Schmidt, thanks to him for coming to the second screening.
Yes, it was great to have him come up.
A lot of you guys came out. Kilt Bill showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have a kilt on. I'm seeing him less and less wearing a kilt, and that bothers me. I prefer to see him in a kilt. And everyone at the festival was really cool. Jennifer and Jeff, they run a really cool festival. It's been going on for 15 years. The Roxy Theater, great little old theater.
A lot of history in that theater.
Yeah, a lot of history. And we saw some cool docs that we mentioned in last week's episode. So yes. If you haven't heard that, we talk about several of the documentaries we saw at the festival, which was really cool. So it was awesome having all you guys show up and to see the film all finished on the big screen.
Yeah, it was really cool.
It was really cool. The color correction, the sound mix, everyone that's worked on this film, you know, it was... Because we've been watching the movie on laptops and shit like that.
Yeah,
like a TV monitor at the most, you know, like a 40-inch screen is the most I've seen this movie on in its completed version. So that was really cool. And
there were some, like the, you know, when we travel to Japan and Australia, those scenes pop a lot more on a big screen.
Yeah.
It's you really see the difference.
And Tawan Bazemore, who we had on this show right after the Oscars, I forget the episode number, he did a great job in terms of a lot of the exteriors and the establishing shots we did in the various cities, Manhattan, you know, Sydney, and then the outback, Tokyo, and all this stuff. They really they pop so well. It made the cinematography that Andrew Garrity and the camera guys brought. Right. It was really cool. It was awesome to see.
And about three quarters of our audience that is listening right now just went, great, well, when the fuck do we get to see it?
Yeah. You know, I know we hear that once a day. I've gotten that on social media once a day. When is it coming out?
So very
Julia
soon.
Julia W.D. Harrison, who was at the show, goes, why did it take so long? So, in the independent doc world, 2 years is not a long time.
No. And for under $200,000. And that's the one thing we learned. You can't make a movie for under $200,000.
Nope. It's funny. These two women who have a East LA Interchange is a documentary that they had in the festival. We haven't had a chance to see it yet. They came up like, holy shit, it took us 10 years to make our movie. Like
we're on the fast lane.
So yeah, we fast-tracked earbuds. But we're doing more festivals, and it'll be for sale in the fall.
Yes.
That's the plan. Mm-hmm. So it is done.
It's coming.
It's, you know.
You'll get, the rewards will go out, and then if you weren't part of the Kickstarter but just want the movie, it'll be for sale on the site. It's coming.
And we're setting up some screenings in L.A. Those will probably just be sort of private screenings to get distributors and sales agents and shit like that out. But, you know, you'll see it. Just settle the fuck down.
Well, let's introduce our guest.
Let's
another first-time guest.
We've been banging on with a first-time guest.
With a fascinating past.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He has a podcast called Get Up On This. And 15 years ago, he was one of the emerging rap stars. in the hip-hop community.
Yes.
Now, we definitely want to hear a little bit about that. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Jensen Karp.
I also like the idea that we never talk about it again. Yeah. you say it in the intro, and then we just let it sit, and everyone's like, I don't know, if we see earbuds, maybe we will, maybe we won't. Maybe we'll know if he's a rapper, maybe we won't. It's just, it'll happen or it won't.
Yeah, we like a lot of mystery
yeah.
in this show.
Yeah. So we're the J.J. Abrams podcast.
Yeah.
We leave a box, we let it sit, we'd never open
yeah.
it.
Yeah, we don't need to answer every question, why there's a polar bear on the island.
No. Let's not really truly address the smoke monster.
Right, no, not at all.
No need. There's no need.
Just make a sound of chains.
Yeah, please. The chains were important. We don't need to know what it was. Let it live. I kind of worked on Lost, so I always feel bad shitting on it.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. What was it like working on Lost?
It was fun. I did marketing for the final season, and it's one of those things where... like, that's a dream job if you're in marketing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then when you're in it...
Because you don't have to give any information.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, you guys should watch it. That's really what your job is. You just make a shirt that says watch it. And it was fun because you get to do anything you want. It was such like a open, empty canvas. And then I did weird scavenger hunt stuff in different cities and different countries. And you could buy posters at the end of it and all this crazy stuff. And it was like, basically, I've never had a job since. Wow. That just sort of allows you any idea you want to go through.
Mm-hmm. How often how much did you get to sort of work with JJ and the cast and stuff like that?
Well, JJ, not much because he really wasn't involved in the show after season one.
Okay.
But I worked with Damon and Carlton every day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which was crazy. I mean, I've never had that in my life since. I've worked on other great things like Breaking Bad and marketing and things, but I didn't work with Vince Gilligan every day.
Right.
That was a one-time thing where Damon, I could get on the phone. I had to get on the phone every day with Damon or in some capacity and get involved with him almost every day for a couple months.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was. It's been about almost 10 years. I don't know when the finale ran, but I started about a year before that. That finale. No, about a year before even the final season. So it's been a long time. But that was really my break, and honestly, in almost everything I do, started sort of from Damon and Carlton believing in me.
Oh, very
weird.
Cool.
Yeah,
that's
super weird.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Your podcast, of course, we were referred to you by our former intern, Sean Merrick.
Over at Sideshow.
Now
yeah.
But you're not a Sideshow podcast.
No, we're on Earwolf. Yeah. It's called Get Up On This.
Mm-hmm. Sweet.
Yeah.
How long have you been doing that?
Now we have approached 250 episodes, I believe. 250. And it's a show where we get people up on things that they should know about, whether it's movies or TV shows or musicians or apps. We have a really good track record as far as getting people into things before it blows up or before it becomes a cool thing to know about. Like today, I'm going to get you up on we're going to talk about a documentary nice. That isn't out yet, that I saw last night that I think will take the world. It has 1,000 followers on Twitter. I think it's going to take the world by storm. I really do. It was incredible, yeah.
Very cool. Well, and Jensen will be at LA Podfest this year, too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We'll be working over there.
So tell us about briefly about your rap career, then we'll get into these movies.
Yeah, I have a book that just came out on Crown Random House called Kanye West Owes Me $300, which is legally allowed to be a title, because he does owe me $300. And it's basically when I was 19 years old, I was one of Los Angeles's biggest battle rappers. I went to USC for film, but at the same time, I was traveling on weekends to shows and just battling whoever, like 8 Mile, like you saw in 8 Mile.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I ended up on a radio contest here in Los Angeles, and I won. It was like a battle every day. You battle against 3 or 4 people. And the guy before me won 10 days. That was the champion. That was like, he won 10. I won 43 days. And so when I ended that reign, I ended up signing $1 million record deal with Interscope Records. And I record an album with Redman and Fabolous and DJ Quick and DJ Clue and the Black Eyed Peas. And one of those people was a very young Kanye West. So this book is a collection of stories from being like the most, because I look like if J.J. Abrams was like, I want to be more Jewish, which I don't know why he would do that. But I don't look like your normal rapper. I don't sound like it. So it's a fish out of water story about all these experiences I faced. One is with Kanye. That's just one story. But it's a bunch of different stories about someone who was sort of promised fame and in the end didn't necessarily work out for him. And it's a sort of full progress story, and I'm really proud of it.
Now, do you think after the first printing of this book, you'll get a check from Kanye for $300?
I think he should have done it earlier, because he knew of the title, from what I understand. I mean, that would have just cut my legs off, because I would have went and done interviews and been like, well, he paid me, so the title is sort of insignificant now. But I had a great time with him. It's not like a book that dogs him. It just sort of tells you what I saw, and being one of the first stops for such a huge megastar, and being there when he had adult braces and stuff. It's just like such a weird thing to see what he's become.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
That's cool, man.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. So where should we start? Should we start at Now You See Me Too? Okay. Let's hear it. Now, before you start, I have to say the first movie, wasn't that great. It was watchable. It was passable. But it was interesting.
We were talking about before the show. It's something you could barely get through on a plane.
Right. Yeah, it's an airplane movie.
You go, okay, yeah, this will kill
and
2 hours.
It
yeah.
had an interesting premise that kind of Clive Barker has also kind of gone through a little bit, where, you know, you have people doing magic, but then they actually have magic powers, like Lord of Illusions kind of thing. But the whole first movie was getting to that point where, like, real magic is revealed, and, like, that's how it ends. I'm like, okay, so you just gave me a first act.
It's an origin, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Of and a very sloppy and slow first act at that. So now I'm curious to see, does this movie pick up there where, yep, magic is real, now we're going to see, like, how it all implements into showmanship and how all that works.
God, this movie... is so puzzling on so many levels.
Like magic hands puzzling? Yeah. Or puzzling like, ugh.
Like why did you do this?
Right. Like, not like, how'd he do that?
Yeah. Like, no way. It's really like, why? Yeah. Why did
you
make this?
Got
like,
it.
It's so, first of all, where do I start? it says, okay. So the trailer for this and the whole movie acts like they have this amazing, like everyone can't wait to see this. Like the first movie was just nuts. Like everyone went, holy shit. Did you see Now You Can See Me or whatever? Now You See Me. The trailer is like, they're back. And it's like, who gives a shit?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not Ocean's 14.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. It's like, and that's what they're acting like. You know,
like it's the first Avengers movie.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. Like it's the advertising of like when they showed Spider-Man in the Captain America trailer and you went, oh, fuck.
Yeah, they got the band back together.
Like, holy shit. Yeah. Like, you got chills. And then, you know, Civil War is a really awesome movie. This movie, God damn it. It's the magic trick is how did you get Mark Ruffalo, Morgan Freeman, and Michael Caine to agree to this fucking movie?
Yeah.
That's the trick because they try really hard. They try so hard to like, all right, I'm an actor. I'm a film actor. I'm going to get these are really solid actors, but God damn it. It makes little to no sense. And Jesse Eisenberg,
who is his agent?
What the fuck is he going on?
I don't know what he's doing.
It's like this and then the Lex Luthor. It's like he's Johnny over the top.
I'm even going to throw in the Woody Allen movie. I mean he's making very weird decisions that are not putting him in a very like Darling-esque manner.
No, he's getting depth.
Yeah, he is getting depth. He's getting, I mean, let's not hope the long-term depth, but like he is getting depth. It's just like, what are you, what decisions, who is doing this? And then you see things like Miles Teller and you're like, well, good for him. Like there are certain people in his job, in his little demographic that are making good decisions, Michael B. Jordan, et cetera, but not this kid.
I know he's good. He is the antithesis of the other Miles Teller and Michael B. Jordan who have like a Fantastic Four misfire.
Sure. But you have to do those.
Let's forget
them. You have to do those.
Because if anyone came to you and like, do you want to be fit?
You don't have to do all of them.
No.
Right.
also, you don't have to do the ones that make you make bad decisions.
Right.
Like the Lex Luthor one, he made bad acting decisions. And that to me is like, because I've had an agent since I was a kid or whatever.
Right.
Like I think the good agents are the ones that don't just say, okay, you have to play Lex Luthor. It's also like, how are you going to play it?
Right.
Like instead, he was a mess.
I know.
Yeah, he was like a human mess in it.
And this was another human mess. This is another.
Yeah.
Where he's just like, he's.
Do you see the difference too of like Jesse Eisenberg is the type of actor that needs a really strong director?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, he needs a very strong director.
Fincher, he needs like a...
Because Mark Ruffalo and Morgan Freeman and Michael Caine, they're not going to let the guy that did the Step Up movies make them look bad.
Right.
No.
They're going to show up on set and go, okay, I'm going to do... Here's how we're going to do this. And they don't look horrible. The dialogue and the story points are just stupid. Like, the first one had a couple... There were some set pieces in the first one.
Right. There were some moments.
Cool. I like that first set piece, the big reveal Vegas kind of show from the first one. Yeah.
I even like the first one, the set piece where they had this weird like little mechanism when they hit the apartment and then water flew and like stuff lit up.
Yeah, that was cool. Mm-hmm. That was cool. Yeah. Mission Impossible kind of vibe for magicians. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's also hard to make a bad movie about magicians, in my opinion. Like I love Prestige. I even like the one that's not Prestige, it's not as good. What was that? I forget it. Whatever. The point is they also, I know this because Like there's like a little weird scene about like cool magicians in LA. Like, obviously, because the castle and things
right,
that happen here.
Right.
But then there's, like, David Kwong, and there's, like, a handful of dudes that are, like, becoming big deals. And there's one right now that's going on with Frank Oz near UCLA. They're all involved in this movie.
I know.
Great magicians are involved in this movie.
That's what's so puzzling.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's supposed to be this... You would think, like, oh, the magician community is going to really get on board with this. I mean, the guy who directed the first one was Lewis Lederer. Okay, now he did the two of the Transporter movies. He did Incredible Hulk.
He's an action director.
Yeah, yeah. He did, you know, he's got, he did Brothers Grimsby. You know, okay. That's
proficient.
Fine. That's yeah, exactly. That's the perfect word. He's proficient.
Yeah.
The person that did this movie is, like I said, he's one of the Step Up guys.
Oh, so. No. Let's not let him off the hook just with Step Up, too.
Yeah, he's Chew. He's
G.I. Joe Retaliation and Gem and the Holograms.
Bieber's Belieb.
Yeah.
Belieb and Belieber. So, like, this guy
is a horrible director.
But isn't he set up to do even bigger things now?
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah,
I'm sure
I think his developments are crazy, I think, if I remember.
It's well, let's look it up. So that's part of the problem is... You see...
enabling horrible directors.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
Well, it's Hollywood.
And letting them do the worst things.
There's nothing more powerful than a man in Hollywood who's directed once. That's all you need. Just, oh, I directed once? Okay, I'll get the next job. Like, it's crazy.
It's so he's done... his lineage is the, you know... Oh, Now You See Me 3 has already been announced.
Well, yeah, that's been greenlit from the announcement of 2. They did them. They announced them together, which is crazy.
You know,
Sometimes studios just need a write-off.
I guess.
Yeah, I did. It's just like I don't. So,
is there any type of story with this movie at all?
Because that's what this guy does. He comes in. The Step Up movies are hilariously entertaining.
They are. They're entertaining. Yeah,
they are because they're like a martial art movie that has great fight scenes.
Yeah.
Because the dance scenes are fucking unbelievable.
Incredibly shot, yeah.
They're incredibly shot. They're incredibly choreographed. And then it's always some Save the Teen Center storyline and who gives a shit.
Yeah.
So that's what he did to this. He's like, why do we need a storyline when I'm just going to have all these big, dumb magic things and none of them make sense. And the whole movie is these guys getting bamboozled, you know, and is it? Is that the reality or is it? Like, oh, shut up. Who gives a shit? Like, it's one dumb... What? Like, I don't know how many times I said that in the theater. I was like, huh? And they're trying to be so cute and so clever. And it's just like, it was really, you know. And then Lizzie Kaplan comes in, her character, and she's the wise ass, you know, street magician.
Because Isla Fisher could not be there because due to pregnancy.
Yeah, she was really? Pregnant.
Really? Was it due to pregnancy?
Is that what she calls the script?
Yes.
It's a weird name for a script. Yeah.
You know, I'm going to be pregnant while this is shooting.
My biggest problem with this film is it has bad pregnancy.
Yeah.
it's not pregnant well.
Yeah. So it's like, it's not even... It's a movie I don't think you could watch on a flight.
Wow.
Like on an international flight.
That's
crazy.
Like
where you really need
to... It's about magic. Like, a plane should be totally fine.
Yeah. And it's really brutal to watch. And you're just like, you know, Jesse Eisenberg, he's either going to start making some better decisions or he's going to keep making shitty ones and then blame the press for bad reviews or whatever. And I'm wondering if he personally is just becoming a dick.
I don't know. He doesn't do press, really.
Yeah.
He is pretty quiet. He doesn't... That whole generation is pretty quiet. But I'm so confused by him. And I was such a fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
How could you not be?
Well, maybe he'll come back around.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. I hope he doesn't go Emil Fisher... what was his name? Emil Hirsch?
Yeah.
Because I was stoked on Emil Hirsch, too. Right. He was great.
And then he lost his shit.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Yeah, this movie's horrible.
All right. Well, let's do a palate cleanser then before we get into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Let's do Tickled. You saw
it. I cannot recommend this movie enough. Mm-hmm. I was lucky to see a screening yesterday, but it comes out next week in the U.S. I believe it's already out in New Zealand, which is where the filmmakers are from. Mm-hmm. And this is a documentary I knew very little about. It would be a disservice to you to tell you too much. Mm-hmm. But what I will do is I'll tell you it is a documentary that at certain points in the film you will swear is a mockumentary. It is not. It is completely a truthful film. And it is about an Australian or New Zealand pop culture. Think of him as an NPR journalist. So he picks up personal interest stories. Sometimes they get a little viral because, you know, they're weird and strange. He looks for weird stories. And he's popular there. And one day he stumbles upon a competitive tickling video, which involves little kind of younger athletic men, you know, in their 20s, early 20s, in Adidas suits. And they are on top of a man, and they're just tickling him, and it's got a weird vibe to it. It clearly feels
really. It sounds, when you say it out loud, it's
yeah.
Normal.
Well, you know, we all have our fetishes, and so you watch it, and you just like, you know, it's more like, what is going on here? You know, like what's the deeper story here? And so they start to. He puts it up on the site and sort of very lightly, kind of involves it in his article, but he doesn't go deep on it. And then actually friends of ours, I believe, the Dollop guys.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
So the Dollop guys bring it up on a podcast, and that's mentioned in the movie, which was amazing to see. And that picks up a little bit of heat. And so now the Reddit community sort of follows up on this video. And from there, they are contacted. I'm not telling you anything you can't see in the trailer, which is my goal here. They're contacted by a company that tells them to legally please stop mentioning the videos in any sort of way, or we will sue you. And that company has a female name. And from there, they investigate everything that moves forward from that one letter. Wow. I guess it's also important to know that the letter is extremely homophobic because the reporter is gay. And it uses the F word. It's a crazy letter. And that's what opens up.
Was from a company, though.
Yes.
And that sort of opens up the whole...
It is what you wish Catfish was. It's what you wish it starts from.
Catfish is so disappointing. Like,
this is what you wish it was. This is,
oh my god,
it is not only one of the funniest documentaries I've ever seen, which says it's a testament to the two filmmakers,
mm-hmm. which are their names are David Farmer and Dylan Reed.
That's them, and they deserve every kudos they get. It reminds me of, okay, and I know this is a weird analogy, but it reminds me of Flight of the Conchords, because a lot of times when music is not in comedy, I'm like, ugh, it's like, especially with my history. But the way Flight of the Conchords would weave in music, it was so funny. It was like so talented. Mm-hmm. In a similar New Zealand way, these guys are able to make an extremely disturbing documentary, a hair up on your arm at times documentary with laugh out loud bust ups. And the weaving in and out of it is, it's just a talented documentary.
Wow.
So yeah. The whole thing is not about just competitive tickling.
No, it's actually not about competitive tickling. We start there, but it goes into a completely different universe.
Wow.
And it is, I mean, there was applause. And if you're in Los Angeles, this coming weekend, the 16th, 17th, 18th, I believe, mm-hmm. The filmmakers are here. Or at least one of the filmmakers are here, and he's doing a Q&A and screening at the Regent, I believe is the name of the theater.
Oh, yeah.
And so that, I know they have tickets up right now, but I can, 1,000 Twitter followers on this movie. I tweeted about it last night, and they retweeted me immediately. This is going to be a sleeper hit for docs.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love hearing that. I'm pumped.
Oh, it is.
Now I want to see it now.
Great. Yeah.
All right.
Incredible.
Tickled. Sweet.
Uh-huh. All right. So
I wish I could tell you more, but it ruins the movie.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No,
let's all go see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The docs like that are like discoveries. That's why they're so cool. You just go in not really knowing and just, you know, yeah. let it wash over
it's,
you.
It's the thing, and we talk about it a lot on this show, but that's one of my favorite types of documentaries is the... Well, we're going to kind of cover this thing. What the fuck? And then it takes some crazy turn.
One of my favorite documentaries of all time is called Capturing the Freedmans.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which started the Drecke, who created Movie Phone and then became a millionaire and wanted to make movies. He wanted to test his filmmaking by making a documentary about rich family birthday clowns.
Right.
In New York City. So he just interviewed clowns for couple weeks, and all the ones who get, you know, thousands of dollars to show up to Park Place, and one of them, he said, well, let's talk about your family, and the guy goes, oh, I don't speak about my family. And he's like, okay. And he went home and he showed the footage to his wife, and his wife was like, go back. And he's like, what do you mean? He's like, go back to that man. And he went back, and you don't even know, in Capturing the Freedmans, if you watch it, you don't know that it becomes a movie about this man's family.
Wow.
He never says, I started as a documentary about clowns. You never know any of that. You just watch this movie, and that, like, that to me is what I made a documentary, and it's funny you said 2 years for a full feature. I made a documentary that took me 2 years, and it's 13 minutes. So I know where you're coming from. But the journey of making those movies is what I like. As I've grown older, I've moved away from action movies, and these are the things that I sort of love the most, or these journey films.
Yeah, I mean, we went through that a little bit, not entirely. We were asked this question at one of the Q&As in San Francisco about, like, earbuds. We set out to talk about podcasting, and we were going to talk about, you know, Paul Gilmartin's mental illness happy hour, and then we got all these interviews of people talking about their battles with mental illness and how podcasting had helped with that, and that changed the focus of the movie a little bit, you know.
Yeah, and Paul's podcast helped me too. I did it. Yeah,
yeah, it's a great podcast.
Yeah.
Well, cool. All right. Tickled. I'm in.
Yes.
So check it out. The next one is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows, the sequel.
Also now, about competitive tickling.
Yes. I did see the first one.
And homophobia.
Yeah. 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 I'm sure they got a dig in there somewhere.
You know, I'll tell you, this is faint praise, but it's better than the first one, you know? And one of the main problems with the first one was
everything?
That, other than everything, was that the main issue was the tone. Like, these are Ninja Mutant Turtles. Mm-hmm. Stop trying to make it serious. It's not, you know, like that, the whole Michael Bayifying of, like, we just need bigger explosions and bigger things blowing up and larger threats and all this nonsense. It didn't fit the license. I mean, then you're not making a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. So this one, to put it in perspective, like, if you started at 0 and you needed to get to 10 for a full course correction, this one got to 4. So,
okay. That's not strong.
Well,
so you could see there was an attempt made, like, you know, let's try to make this a little bit lighter. It is, you know, produced by Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
It's a fairly new director, Dave Green, who did Earth to Echo.
Yeah.
Yes. And which was also not a great movie.
That was his first movie, Earth to Echo?
Yeah, he did a bunch of shorts prior to that. Chris's laptop is speaking to us.
Yes. I guess that's good for him.
Yeah, he did a bunch of shorts, and he did some TV shorts. That's it. He's done TV.
That's crazy.
But I will say it was a better tone. Was it more competent filmmaking? No, of course it wasn't. Right, it was But I liked the fact that they made an attempt, like more jokes, you know, funnier, more ridiculous scenes. You know, there's, you know, they added like the other two mutants, the
Bebop and Rocksteady. And Casey Jones is in it. Was he in the first one?
Oh my God. Yeah. Casey Jones was in it, but completely just extraneous, just thrown in. And it's Stephen Amell from Arrow.
Arrow. Yeah.
And I saw an interview with him saying, you know, it's hard to get into features when you're in TV because you have a limited window, and then whatever's shooting, whatever you're offered. He goes, I didn't set out to do another superhero movie. He was pretty much saying this is what was offered to me. And then he was trying to make a difference between his character in Casey Jones and Arrow. And as I'm reading the article, and I'm thinking, okay, there is no difference. Right. That's pretty much what he's saying. And I saw the movie. It's Arrow Light. It's... You know, Stephen J. Amell, while I like Arrow, it's a very kind of David Duchovny kind of thing. Like, he might have even gotten the direction of, like, well, just kind of be like Oliver Queen, but funnier or something, you know, because you could tell it was just him just being a little lighter, but still the same character.
Huh.
And Casey Jones is a fun character in the comics. Yeah. You know, there's a lot you could do with that character.
In the cartoon.
Yeah, and in the cartoon.
He was awesome.
So again, it's like... filmmakers and, you know, studios that don't care that much about these characters, just throw it out there. It's all about the effects. It's all about the big visual spectacle. And the only thing that I did like this time was that there was more of an effort to make it funnier and make it sillier and goofier, which is what it should be. That's what it always was meant to be. Then you've got, like, you know, the alien isn't this time, Krang.
How's that look?
Again, this is one of the problems with it. Like, too realistic. Mm-hmm. Like, these should be sillier, funnier characters. Like, and I always had a problem with these, with the designs of the turtles. They look too human and too...
They're buff.
Well, now you're making them look, like, weird and realistic and creepy. But they're mutant ninja turtles. They can look a little cartoony. It's okay.
They look like they're on the Jersey Shore.
Right?
Yeah. Like, big buff. Yeah.
Jersey Mutant Turtles.
Crazy. Mutant Turtles is a good movie.
And if you look at the original one that, you know, Henson kind of did the suits. Yeah. They were more cartoonish. They looked,
you Corey Feldman was one of the voices.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give me a break.
Yeah. It was, you know, it's like, okay, that's kind of how they, you know, they were supposed to look as far as like not these weird hyper-realistic bodybuilding, you know, mutant turtles. So
the Clippers are in it, right?
Right.
The Los Angeles Clippers?
For a brief moment, yes.
It's a funny cameo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone but Blake Griffin, I think.
Yeah.
Everyone else in it.
And there's like, you know, their little Easter eggs, like Mirage 84 was on a license plate, and that's when they first appeared in Mirage Comics. But there was, like I said, it's better than the first one. It's also an interesting thing where the rating was purely marketing, like PG-13. It was not a PG-13 movie. The first one kind of was because it was all Michael Bayified with the crazy violence and stuff. But this one was Ant-Man. It was PG. There's no reason it had to be PG-13, with the exception of you want to try to get the teenagers in, and they're not going to go see a PG movie. But there's no reason for it. But my favorite flaw of this movie, because it was so ridiculous, is it starts out with, you know, Shredder, their arch nemesis, getting, you know, him rescued from police custody. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, all right, now he's going to go on a tear and stuff. Nope, just kind of walks around, scowls. He never fights. It's like the whole point is that so to weird. See the crazy giant, you know, martial artist, like, well, no, he should kind of be fighting.
That's so weird.
You know, and it's all these weird kind of choices. Like, I'm like, well, that was a weird choice. I mean, I don't know if that helped the story at all. A lot of loose ends never get tied up. But again, the first one was so bad. This is like, well, they tried. This was an attempt at an improvement, and it was a better film. But, you know.
Yeah.
It's a relative term.
I will devil's advocate it slightly. I haven't seen it. But I will say that I think making Ninja Turtles movies with Michael Bay, with a big studio or whatever like this, it seems like a disaster before it starts.
Of course, yeah.
Like, this seems like the...
That's one not of devil's the, advocate. That's just advocate.
Yeah. Because here's my thing. I can't imagine what the notes on Ninja Turtles movies are like.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
They must be so insane.
Right.
Like, I can't even fathom where it starts and where it ends.
Right.
Like, because I've seen notes on things before and been like, wow, that's crazy. I can't think of a ninja, like, and also with directors in their second movie.
Right.
Like, imagine what these people have to put up with.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, even if they had a good movie at one point, it is a guarantee this movie will get bad by the end, just based on picking it, like picking it apart. So
I'm sure there was a note, all right, we'll get Megan Fox in a skimpier outfit quicker.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm
and that's
sure
what happened, like, right away.
Yeah.
She's in a skimpy outfit. I'm like, oh, okay.
God,
well,
I wish I could be in a screening room at the studio and listen to the notes.
Oh, it's got to be, this one's got to be brutal. I mean, all those big property ones that didn't work the first time, and then you have a director that's listening to notes in the second one. Like, I can't imagine what these people are telling him. And also, like, those guys that write it, I mean, I hate to out this, are great dudes. It's Applebaum and his partner, Nemec, is his last name?
Yeah, Josh Applebaum and Andre Nemec.
Andre Nemec. I'm close with Josh, which is... I am close with Josh, and I think he makes great stuff. He was working on Beverly Hills Cop with Eddie Murphy recently. These movies are sorta. I mean, they're cooks in the kitchen.
Right.
is a minor statement about it. I think it just these things are destined to be turds.
Right.
Yeah, is what I'm
you
saying.
Can't. There's no way.
There's no way you make this movie without 4 million people telling you what to do.
Yeah, right. And
right?
All of them are dumb. And
yeah,
they know what they're talking
no
about.
No one knows what they're talking about. And then also imagine even like when like we need more Casey Jones. We need less Casey Jones. We need more. It's got to be like that's what it has
more
to
Megan
be.
Fox.
Yeah.
Less Megan Fox.
Less Megan Fox.
No.
More Megan Fox.
The skirt needs to be shorter.
We need the Clippers. Can we put the Clippers in 2 more minutes? It's like, what are you doing? Why are we doing this?
Got to get the Clippers in.
Yeah, it's like,
what?
Come on.
No, you don't.
Yeah, we really
does anyone give a shit about
don't need it.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is a great franchise for a small company and a small film, more independent. That's why, like, I remember the first one when New Line grabbed it.
Yeah.
It was like New Line was like the small upstart, up and coming. Like, why are they grabbing that? And it was a huge hit because they stuck to kind of the tone and what it was. And also, it doesn't hold up, the original one.
No.
But at the time, you were like, oh, those are great costumes and they can fight in them. And, But now, the trajectory, like you're talking about, you have this cool kind of indie property. It was always an indie comic too, and then giant studio. They're just never gonna match.
Yeah, and that's why Marvel's winning.
Right.
It's true. Marvel's winning because they're making that transition really great. And DC has great properties. Fantastic Four, I mean, for Marvel and Fox. But there are properties that are good in other hands that are just, they're losing in that sort of process. And I think that that's where a lot of these, that's why I haven't liked action movies for a long time, is I can see the process when I'm watching it.
Yeah, you can see. You're like, oh, I can tell that was some dumb note. And
yeah, right. And that's why I liked Ant-Man.
Yeah.
I expected it to be a total disaster. And I was like, after the Edgar firing and all these things, and I was like, oh, wait till this thing gets noted to death. And then I saw it and was like, ah, it was actually pretty entertaining. Mm-hmm. You know, like that. They're doing it right.
Marvel, it's amazing to me that they, because it's so, it seems to be so difficult when you make these movies by committee, by giant corporate studio people that aren't artistic, that Marvel is able to do what they've done.
It's incredible.
It's really fantastic.
Yeah.
Because the list is so long on the end.
Yeah. The shoe hasn't dropped.
No.
Yeah, it will eventually.
Yeah. Yes.
But it hasn't dropped yet.
All right. So
we have a sponsor.
Yes, we do. Here's a spare man, and we're going to give you just a little tease of this interview, but we want you to go to my spare men, which is at Graham, and listen to it in its entirety. Because the great thing about spare men is you can talk on the phone without giving out your number. You can use it for dating. You could use it for whatever.
It's limited to 5 minutes.
It's limited to 5 minutes. You could just say, hey, I want to have a conversation about this subject and just put it out on social media and these people can, anyone can.
Are you looking for competitive ticklers?
Yes.
You could use this app. Yes. They don't have to know your real number.
Do you have jumpsuits and feathers?
Yeah.
This is for you.
Let's pop it.
Exactly. There's some cosplay crazy stuff you're into. I'm sure you can find someone else on Spare Men. But what I like about it too is that you could make your conversation public or keep it private. It's up to you. You can pick.
And that's what we're going to do. So download the app. You can either go, it's in Apple, it's in Google Play. Look for the Spearman app or go to spearman.com. We're going to do another fan Spearman a week from today. So next Tuesday at, we'll say, 2 p.m. Pacific time.
June 21st.
We will do, like we did last time, an hour. You can call in and talk to us for up to 5 minutes. It was really cool. Ask us any questions, anything you want to know, talk movies, whatever.
If you just use the Graham Elwood.
We'll just use the at Graham.
At Graham. Okay.
At Graham. Unless we want to make a comedy film nerds one.
That's a great question, Graham.
Yeah.
Should we?
Yeah, let's make it. We're going to make an ad comment. We'll do it out of that one. But we'll be posting on social media.
Yeah.
And everything. So listen to this, and then we'll all talk on Spearman next week.
Hello.
Hello and welcome.
Hi, Jackie Cation.
It's Jackie.
Cation. Yay. We'll both say your name.
Let's both. Yeah.
Thanks for taking the time to do a Spare Min with us. What movie do you want to talk about?
Right. What movie do I want to talk about? For the love of the baby Jesus, I am trying to think of the last movie I went. Oh, I saw Captain America. We talked about that already. X-Men. Last movie I saw was X-Men.
Oh, yeah. I want to hear what you thought about X-Men Apocalypse.
So if you want to hear everything Jackie has to say about X-Men Apocalypse, download the Spearman app and go to at Graham, and you can see all of my public Spearmans and hear everything Jackie has to say about X-Men Apocalypse. Okay, we're back.
Nice.
So
now let's talk about this trailer that we saw over the weekend, The Legend of Tarzan. What did you think of that trailer?
God, I can't decide if this is like going to be cool, like some the newest Planet of the Apes, the Planet of the Apes movie that came out, I think last summer or the summer before, or is it going to be just a train wreck?
The trailer's threading the needle. Is this some kind of, you know, giant effects driven bullshit Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, or are they going back to the source material? They want to actually tell an interesting story. Mm-hmm. And I don't know.
I watched it. I was weirdly bored. which I'm surprised by, because I like watching it. I sort of got that Jungle Book vibe, and I liked the Jungle Book. I thought that was a fun movie. Mm-hmm. I just didn't. I don't know. I didn't. There was no real relation to this for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's. I think that's why I'm sort of the aspects of the trailer. I went ooh, and then I was like, so I can't tell. I can't tell if it has a really cool story, and they just decided to cut a look at how cool our graphics are trailer. Yeah. Or if there's no story and that's why they cut that trailer together.
It's hard to tell from that trailer.
It did make you want to think they go by the old story, though. I know that was the feeling I got from it. Like, they're, like, source material based.
Right.
But I don't... But
that would be great.
That leads me to believe it could be a good film.
Right. That's why. But I didn't feel that way. There was no connection in the actual things I was seeing. I just thought they wanted you to think that. I didn't feel it. It was not... I mean, I don't know. I was excited because it did seem people liked it visually, and so I clicked it, and I was like, oh, I don't know. This feels dumb.
You feel like it's a shell game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got montied. I don't know. It wasn't great.
All right, so Jensen, you saw another documentary, and also we want to talk about your book, but let's talk about this movie, Wiener. Now, I was really surprised this documentary came out, because I just thought that the story's been told. Ugh. There's very few people who want to see more of that story, and it was a kind of a puzzling documentary to me, because it was like, well, how big is the audience for this, really, that would want to see this film?
Yeah, well, I unfortunately said, I can't wait to see Wiener on my podcast, and now it gets used as a drop from fans and my co-host. It gets used, I can't wait to see Wiener. So I'll allow you to have that drop clean here as well. So here's the thing. This... I don't know. We don't need to go too deep. You know the story. He was
Anthony Wiener.
Anthony Wiener.
Yeah.
Tweeted his penis. Picture of his penis. Not even that bad, really, at the time. Earlier.
And then denied it. I'm like, right. Oh, it wasn't me.
Right. And so then he denied it and then had to buckle down and admit that he had a lot of affairs sort of through technology. Mm-hmm. Nope. He has no touching affairs ever. Mm-hmm. He's never touched another person. He's married to one of the most powerful women in the Democratic Party, who is Hillary Clinton's, basically is her right arm, mm-hmm. most important person in Hillary Clinton's life politically. And so the reason this documentary is worth a retread to a story that you know almost everything about, it is not like the Tickling movie. It is not about this Anthony Wiener controversy to me. It is about megalomania. It is about technology in our lives. It is about narcissism. This man asked a documentary and filmmaker to follow him in his comeback. So after the first scandal, he said, follow me. I'm going to run for office again, and I'm going to rebuild my image, and you're going to document it. He still had problems. Even at the time of asking the filmmaker to document it, he has a second run of scandal.
And, wow.
And for the record, the documentary goes on. Mm-hmm. So you see things. It is a horror movie. I'm that sounds like I'm kidding. There are times I had my hands over my eyes watching the interaction between his wife and him while we see things roll in. We see him learn CNN has something new. We see Huma walk in, his wife. We see them interact. We see them sit in silence. We see him turn to the camera and say, okay, we need a couple minutes. We see all of it. And it is a terrible fly on the wall movie. And so, it's beautiful in that way.
In the sense that, so to try to understand, it's more about showing like these like power couples that just make these horrible arrangements?
Well, we do not know the real arrangement there. She's an angel.
Oh, okay.
It may be.
Okay.
Maybe not. I don't know the story. All I know is from watching the documentary, I believe she is a angel on earth in some weird way, or there's something going on that I don't know. But she stands by her husband. We know that because that's in public. We know that they're still together. But watching her react to the things that are coming in, and she's getting plummeted from every angle, hearing these stories, it's you don't need to know much about, like, even in the movie, you just need to know that someone is getting outed publicly, and then you watch what happens behind the scenes, and then you see a megalomaniac. He's an egomaniac, like, but he also is a great politician. Which makes for a very weird dynamic, because he's very passionate. Put him in a room, like any egomaniac, he will turn a room. Even near the end, he turns rooms. He's a great speaker. He's passionate about what he's talking about. But that's the same need inside of him to have these validation relationships, because he's not meeting these women. He's just getting validation through communication. And that's a very strange thing to watch someone juggle, especially on a public scale. So you have it's a cool movie in that way.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Yeah. All right.
And
well, I think you might be turning this room around.
You should.
I actually want to see it now.
Maybe well, you guys want to see a quick picture of my dad?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. I'll show you quick. That's how I get into it, and then I see the opening, and there it goes.
It's about technology.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, it truly is.
Informative episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
But give it a shot.
Okay, and so you just so overall is documentary sort of.
I love them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll see everything. I haven't been a big action guy in the last year or two. It's just because I feel like I've seen it before, mm-hmm. and I'm just waiting. And that's why I did like a couple of movies here or there. But I'm excited to see Civil War because people have convinced me I have to. But I just don't want to. I don't know.
Did the love of documentaries kind of fuel your desire to write the book about what you went through?
I don't know if it fueled it, but it's definitely from the same elk. Like that's where I have a passion mm-hmm. to tell my story is because I've seen. I mean, also therapy. Which is what, I mean, you brought up Paul's podcast, but I didn't talk about that on his show. But therapy, and I had failed, basically. So, like, I didn't release an album, and in hip-hop, that's, like, a cardinal sin. Like, you basically, because you're always so, especially as a battler, you're always so nervous to hand anyone ammo. And basically, being a failed rapper at Interscope Records after they spent $700,000 on you, like, that's the rocket launcher. You know what I mean? So, I didn't really want to do it anymore. And for years, I had treated it, you know, like this sort of hidden past. And I got back into comedy and did well as a writer. And if I got into a room and someone immediately was like, "Hot Carl," my body would stiffen up. I don't want to hear about it. And even if someone would come up and be like, "I loved your music," I just like, "Okay, thanks," and just walk away. Like, I hid this. When it popped up on YouTube, I would email YouTube. I'd flag it.
So, like, you were ashamed of it?
Ashamed of it. And so going through therapy and getting older and developing and sort of understanding it's part of my story and having a bit of a health scare in my life as well, that allowed me to look back and want to tell the story chronologically and sort of from a larger place, which is, yes, I tell stories about writing songs with Cisco, and I tell stories about, you know, very, you know, Mark McGrath through my 21st birthday, very weird stories about being in this scene. But at its core, it's actually about finding a creative dead end and making a U-turn. And
I'm assuming this is true. Did it sort of help you get through the all of the other stuff you were battling about it in terms of the shame of it and then going through, because I'm assuming then there's also when you walk away from that, then there must have been some time, some years of whatever of struggling to get work and kind of shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which then of course fuels the,
all of
I'm
it.
I'm an asshole. This is a failure, a waste, or whatever.
That's what did I do wrong?
That's what it is. Like, yeah, and I have obsessive thoughts disorder, which I talk about in the book a lot, which is, it's OCD. It's like washing your hands, but I have it for thoughts. So they have no significance as to, like, if my father passed, but I don't think about that as much as I think about maybe, like, I, like, broke something in the house. Like, right. I broke a candy dish in my mother's house, and I'll think about that more than I will my father passing. Mm. And so, like, I don't have a gauge for those things, so I have to deal in real time with them. So failing was, like, very tough on my obsessive thoughts.
Right.
So I ended up...
I can't identify with that at all.
Well, yeah, I think everyone has a little bit of it.
That's all I do.
Yeah, it's rough. And so but I've really been able to conquer it, and this book is sort of the... kind of the peak of that, which is I can look back from a non-bitter avenue. Like, mm-hmm. I can look from a fresh pair of eyes and tell the story, tell all of my stories, but then also talk about my feelings. I was a 21-year-old trying to get on TRL. I'm not going to wink about it now. Like, I want you to know that I had those human emotions and they were crushed at a young age. But I opened an art gallery with that money immediately after. It's called Gallery 1988 in Los Angeles. It's all pop culture based stuff. And watching that come together right afterwards, and that took 3 years to start making profit. Like, I had a journey, and this is just the small path. This is just from the day I started to want to rap when I was 13 to the day I decided to not do it again when I was 23.
Hmm.
22.
What got you to the place of, all right, I'm ready to write a book, talk about it, be open about it, be open about all of the emotions of it, and look at it, as you say, sort of through... on the other side of the journey.
It's therapeutic to write it, isn't it?
You
can work out so many things when you're writing mm-hmm.
I got the chance to write my ending, like mm-hmm. which is a huge deal. Like, when things are creatively taken from you, they have the last word.
Yeah.
And I've been given the opportunity to frame it differently. And that's what, I mean, it is a very funny book. It's a lot of jokes, but at the same time, like, it is emotional, and I went through hard times, and I actually, the reason I wrote the book is that I was diagnosed with brain tumors a couple of years ago, they are not developing and not growing. So they just have to get tested every 6 months. But when you're waiting to see if you have
brain tumors,
I have those to figure out if they are like multiplying brain tumors. You know, like the basically
right.
the thing you hear when people die is that they keep growing and mm-hmm. you have a huge tumor and it's growing. And I don't have those. They're stagnant. But those 6 days of waiting, fuck. You think like, oh, what goes in your mind? And I didn't have a bucket list or I have a very small family. Those things, I didn't have a girlfriend, I didn't have a child, I didn't have anything. But what came up was I had unfinished business. And I knew that I had to tackle this to feel more complete. And I've had, like this book came out last week, it's been the best week of my life. And not just because like it gets a lot of attention or whatever, it's been the best week of my life because I feel free. Like I feel right. better and I feel open and I like it's been, and a lot of people who, I had a book release party at the Skylight Books in Los Feliz and it was a great turnout. And a lot of the people from my story were there. And it felt weirdly like cool. a TV show. And like mm-hmm. one of the people who, when you read the book, his name is DJ, he's an A&R, and he's not necessarily your favorite character in the book. He's part of a problem. And to have him there and to like release my feelings about him and just, that's it. I'm happy he's here. Like that stuff was really therapeutic for me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And so you actually turned book signings into group therapy.
I turn everything into group therapy, but yeah, I turn every relationship into group therapy. So why not turn my book signing into it? Yeah.
That's really, really cool.
Cool. Thanks. I'm excited to read it.
Thank you.
So, okay. So let's talk about DVD and Blu-rays, 10 Cloverfield Lane.
My fave.
Fucking, wasn't it a blast?
My favorite movie of the year so far. That, mm-hmm. that and Tickled are my two favorite movies of the year so far.
Such a blast. And this is the great thing. Like if you didn't see it in theaters, man, get the DVD or watch it on VOD wherever you can find it. It's a blast.
It's so good.
I said, my only complaint was how it was presented to me. You know, you need to put it into the Cloverfield universe. It's fine on its own.
Yeah, and that guy's going to make everything, right? That guy's going to get a Star Wars and
yeah.
yeah. What's his name? He was like, he's part of our scene a little bit. He's like in with the Slash Film dudes. He is. He's like, he used to do like a podcast with them. And he was a buyer at my art gallery for a long time.
Oh.
He's a really nice guy. Just Trachtenberg. Dan Trachtenberg.
Yeah, he's part of the Buffyverse.
Yeah, he's
for
great.
A while, right?
I don't know. I just think he's great. Mm-hmm. But this is his first movie. Right? He did a short.
He's written for a long time.
Oh, he has.
Yeah, he's written forever, but this was his first feature. He did a couple of shorts, one called Kick and one called Portal.
Portal's the one that got a lot of attention.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is...
good for him. He should make a million movies.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's always a good one.
Give him a magic movie.
Yeah.
He's great.
London Has Fallen.
Yeah, that's another sequel that no one could wait for.
Wow, that was exciting. This will be something I don't know if I'll get through on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not seeing that.
Yeah.
Eddie the Eagle, it's always funny when some of these like big inspirational Olympic stories get completely ignored by audiences and the press, and this is one of them. It was a
Australian
ski jump.
Yeah.
Ski jumper.
There's no ski jumping in Australia.
Or it was England or something and then but I think it had Hugh Jackman in it too.
Yeah.
It was a weird thing. Like you would see billboards and stuff. You would have no idea what it was about. It was a weird marketing campaign. And
yeah, that's right. He was a British underdog. I guess it's based on a true story. Mm-hmm. Who charmed the world at the '88 Winter Olympics? And Hugh Jackman's in it.
Well, the guy actually going door to door would have been probably more people than saw the movie.
Yeah,
this is actually a movie that I would be on a plane and go, oh. I never saw this. I'll give this to, this.
Imagine working in plane movies.
Yeah.
We're making this because it's going to be great on a plane.
I know. Oh,
God. It's the worst.
It's our lives.
And then another one was Get a Job. This is an Anna Kendrick movie about, people. This is still happening, by the way. People graduate college, have trouble finding jobs.
Yeah.
So it hasn't changed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great.
I just find it fascinating that Anna Kendrick has played everything from an executive to a high school student for the last like 10 to 20 years.
Yeah, yeah. Pitch Perfect. One, she's a college student, right?
Yeah.
She's like 35. Yeah.
So good for her. She's ageless. And now we actually went into the vault a little bit and saw some older movies. You saw Dragon?
I saw Dragon. So that's a Donnie Yen film that came out in 2011. I saw it on one of the online streaming services whose name we're not going to mention anymore because they didn't have nice things to say about earbuds.
Gone. Yeah. Yeah, gone.
So Dragon's a really cool movie. Donnie Yen, who we've talked about on this show before, It's really interesting. I'll read you the synopsis for it. A paper maker gets involved with a murder case concerning two criminals, leading to a determined detective suspecting him and the former's vicious father searching for him. So it's really cool. It takes place in like China in like 1919. There's great action. It looks really beautiful. Like I would take the time to watch this on a nice flat screen and turn the lights down and don't have your laptop. You know, this isn't a background film. This is like, give it the attention it deserves. It's really beautiful. It's a cool story, and it's nice. It's good action.
Very cool. Well, I saw Redbeard. This is Kurosawa's movie, and first of all, I was a little disappointed, not about a pirate.
No, well, I mean, dragon's not necessarily about a dragon.
Yeah, I know. It's like all this false advertising.
Yeah,
it's all and
Eddie the Eagle, not an eagle.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
We have a real problem here, guys. Yeah, we have a real problem.
So this is the only Kurosawa film to feature nudity, which was interesting, and it was not an erotic scene at all. It was an operating table. So it was an interesting film. The thing about Kurosawa's movies is they're always, even when they're slow-paced and when sometimes they feel a little bit like, all right, just get to the point, they're slow burns. They're so good, and they're deceptively simple. Like you think, well, there's not a lot going on, but there is a lot going on when you go back and watch, or when you think about what's going on, or the stuff that builds. Sometimes you don't even see it coming, which is interesting. Now, this is about a kind of like young surgeon that was supposed to like be, you know, I'm supposed to be the head doctor for the Shogun or whatever. And then he gets sent to this little tiny rural hospital in the middle of nowhere. And he doesn't would even put his uniform on. So he's like, I'm better than this.
It's like Doc Hollywood.
So yeah, it's kind of like, it is.
It's a black and white samurai Doc Hollywood.
It is really like a Japanese feudal Doc Hollywood. It really is. And that's exactly what it feels like. But what's fascinating too is because the movie is so long.
So Toshiro Mifune, is he the
Michael J. Fox?
He's Redbeard.
Oh, okay.
He's like the mentor doctor that trains like the
guy
new
that uses the can of Coke to fix the kid that Michael J. Fox
that's it.
Open up.
That's what he is. Right. I love how deep we're going into Doc Hollywood.
And
I love it.
And what's great too is you kind of name a movie Redbeard because he has red in his beard, but it's a black and white movie, so you never actually see it.
Do they say in the movie like he has red in his beard? Do they explain?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's why they call him Redbeard because he has red in his beard because it's a black and white movie. You'd never know.
And then they look at the camera and wink.
Yeah.
Redbeard.
So he wanted it so authentic. This is what I love. Kurosawa wanted the clinic to look so real. It was filled with expensive medical equipment, and even doors that were never opened were actually full of like pill bottles and
that's
stuff.
So
with
weird
pills. So the one thing that did make this movie go on way too long is that it was almost episodic. Like, all right, here's like a new case, solve this. Mm-hmm. It was almost like a weird ER. you're watching four episodes of ER. Like, okay, we're going to solve this medical issue. We're going to solve this medical issue, and then it just kind of built to, a dramatic conclusion. And ultimately, it was a character study between these the young doctor and the older doctor that mentored him.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I can't imagine Kurosawa ever making a bad film.
Yeah.
You know, you look at
Rashomon.
Yeah, you look at all of the movies, even ones that you don't necessarily love, there's always something interesting or good going on that you could enjoy. Even like one that was a big departure for him, like when his final film, Dreams. Mm-hmm. It was basically vignettes that as he was looking back on his life, and you know, some were stronger than others, but it's still always really compelling and interesting. So it's if you've got a large amount of time, like I think this took me 3 or 4 days to finally get through. It was a long movie, and since it's black and white and subtitled, you really got to pay attention.
You got to focus.
So, but it's definitely worth going into the vault to check out. So check out Redbeard.
All right.
Not about a pirate. And the site spotlight and fan feedback. We've got Neil's Warcraft review. I'm surprised he was not as vicious on it as I thought it would be.
He didn't like that movie, did he?
It was borderline. It was like he was lukewarm on it, which is farther than I thought he would get.
The trailer makes it look so dumb.
Yes, and
international numbers though.
Now,
are they just insane?
Oh, China, huge.
It's like the biggest movie in China history or something.
Yeah.
Really?
Because it's based on the video game that everyone plays over there.
Yeah.
World of Warcraft, Warcraft.
But people play it here too, but that, they do. We don't let people get away with movies just because we play the video game.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a little different over there. Now, they did, this is the one rare occasion that they picked an actual filmmaker to make this movie, yeah. Duncan Jones,
yeah.
who did Moon and a couple other interesting movies.
Yeah, he's great.
So you have a filmmaker that tried to actually put an actual movie in here, but ultimately did it succeed? I don't know.
Right.
But check out Neil's review. You can see him being pleasantly surprised on the movie. And the other thing we wanted to talk about is that we're doing some contests. We're giving away some free stuff. I believe it's on Instagram. So check it out. You can check the Twitter and Facebook feeds for the contest details. What's going on is our social media person, Daniel, is handling the contest and shipping out the rewards, so we kind of gave him carte blanche.
Yeah.
Yeah, run it any way you want, so check out what he's doing. We haven't yet, but I know it's going on.
Yeah, go to @ComedyFilmNerds on Instagram and @ComedyFilmNerds on Twitter.
So there's some books and t-shirts, and definitely we're giving away some
all
cool
my
stuff.
Podcast contests social media are run by Anthony Weiner.
Yeah.
So I just let him do whatever he wants.
So it's all just digital rewards.
Yeah, whatever he wants. Yeah, yeah. And you can call them rewards. I don't know what they are.
Dick pics aplenty, guys. Yeah. Just go
there.
We're going to be, you could win a digital penalty.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's not, you're not winning, you're losing. Yeah.
So, okay. So premiering this week, Central Intelligence. I feel bad for Kevin Hart. These are the scripts he's getting. He's a funny guy. I saw the trailer, and it's like, it's another movie put together by a computer.
And that catchphrase,
computer.
It feels like that catchphrase came up first.
Yeah. Yeah.
Little Heart, Big Johnson.
Yeah.
Feels like the movie. Like, right. I was like, oh, that's a good idea. And then
that was the pitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's
Little
some,
Heart, Big Johnson.
Yeah. By the way, I'd buy that pitch.
Right.
Yeah. It's a good pitch. It's better than what they made. I mean, it's like, man, that's a good pitch. I like that.
There's some studio AI that's just spitting all of these things out.
Yeah.
There's a mainframe.
Yeah. It's just literally spitting these out.
It just walks around.
Yeah. And then just spits out the storyboards, and then, you know, it's tasked to some
Little
horrifying
Heart,
director. Yeah.
You know what they're making together next?
What?
Jumanji.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Kevin Hart and The Rock are making Jumanji together.
They're remaking Jumanji?
Yeah. I wrote on the MTV Movie Awards. This isn't a scoop. It's online.
Mm-hmm.
But I wrote on the MTV Movie Awards. They were the hosts. And at one point, Kevin Hart jokingly, we were talking about stuff. He's like, you know how fucking famous we are? We're making Jumanji, which is my favorite line. I want that as a t-shirt. You know how fucking famous we are? We're making Jumanji. It made me laugh so hard. But yeah, they're making Jumanji together.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
I don't know how that works, but.
Nice.
All right.
Good luck.
Yeah. Finding Dory. I don't know how good this movie is going to be. I just know it's going to make a fortune.
The early reviews are really good.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad, because the trailers kind of make it look like a retread.
Good. Yeah, it looks bad.
Yeah,
like bad trailers.
Yeah.
I know.
Didn't we just see the story before?
Yeah. It's supposedly good, though. Everyone likes it.
Yeah. So, and then this next is a documentary, Raiders, the story of the greatest fan film ever made. Now, I would imagine you can't wait to see this.
I'm just very excited. It's been, this is one of those rumored movies for like 10 years, too.
Yes.
This has been around forever. It's about guys who recreated Raiders of the Lost Ark.
This fan film has been around forever.
Yeah, I've never seen that either.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been, but it's also like had some legal issues here and there, right?
Yes.
About screening it.
Right.
And now, because
that'd be weird.
Because
they did a shot-for-shot remake of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Is that illegal?
I
know this is a dumb question, but is that illegal?
If it makes money, it is.
Right, but I always thought they just screened it.
So, well, then, it depends how aggressive the lawyers want to get.
Yeah, I guess they did get aggressive.
Right.
But anyway, this documentary follows them while they're... Because they started when they were like 12 or something.
Yeah, they were 11 years old in 1981.
And they finished when they were like in their 30s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they made a shot-for-shot remake, and then this is the story of them doing it.
Right.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm very excited.
That's,
this is awesome.
Like, everything that's great about a documentary.
It's perfect. Mm-hmm.
Two people with a crazy idea that takes their whole lives.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. I love it.
And we get to see the journey of making it and then the actual finished
product. To make a movie that was already made. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. To reshoot it. And supposedly some of the shots are like really good and then other ones are like campy, but they're supposed to be really...
But it's the thing that's why all of us, you know, were kids when that movie came out. We all go, oh, that sounds awesome.
It sounds great.
I'd make that in my backyard.
Yeah, I would give 25 years of my life to that.
Yeah,
I've thought about that more than I have marriage.
Yeah.
I've definitely thought about remaking a film from my childhood more than having kids.
I'd start doing it now.
Yeah, I would do that right now.
Maybe we should do Goonies.
Yeah. Oh, Goonies would be good.
Chris's Backyard.
Let's do Now You See Me Too.
Yeah. It's a small shot remake.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, we would do a director's cut.
Yeah.
It's a real undertaking.
Our remake would have a story.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is the difference.
And in actors that wanted to be there.
Yeah. That is
a fan reboot.
Oh, yeah. Fan reboot's not a bad idea.
That's a great idea.
Fan reboot's kind of Cloverfield.
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit. It's like, oh, I made it what I wanted. I can see that.
That's why 10 Cloverfield
works. Great. I know. I know.
All right. Well, that's our episode, guys.
That's everything.
So download the Spearman app, listen to who we had on today, and of course we'll do the fan one next week on the 21st. We will be announcing more screening dates for Earbuds. In the meantime, of course, Los Angeles Podfest, September 23rd through the 25th. We have sold, I'm not making this up, we have sold more tickets now than we have in years past, so it's going to sell out before the event. So buy your tickets. We keep adding more shows. If you go to lapodfest.com, that's sort of a placeholder page. We're working on making the page all...
And Jensen's the first time he's going to be in the festival.
That's right. It'll be our first time Matt and I will be coming. We'll have a great guest, I'm sure. I'll be very excited.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Will it be Kanye West?
Probably not.
Yeah.
Maybe just a stack of $300 bills.
Yeah.
And I just interview it and talk to it about what it, why it means, why it's so important to me.
Yeah. He's going to interview $300
bills. Yeah. No big deal.
Well, we're happy to have you.
I'm excited. Yeah. Thank you guys for having me on. And you can follow me on Twitter at JensenClan88 with a C because I'm not racist. It's JensenClan88. And then all the stuff I do is at jensencarp.com with a K.
Where can they get the book?
Everywhere. But I put all the avenues that they told me to put on. Like the company was like, it's like Amazon and it's an iBook or for your Kindle. And then I narrated the audiobook. So all that stuff is at jensencarp.com. It's JensenKarp.com.
And the name of the book?
Kanye West Owes Me $300 and Other True Stories from a White Rapper Who Almost Made It Big.
And we're going to look into carrying here at the CFN store, but they'll be special. They will be signed.
Oh, yeah,
I'll sign those with different quotes from the second Ninja Turtles film. Each one will be inscribed with a different quote. I'll pull them.
So Cowabunga.
Yeah, Cowabunga, That's Cool Pizza Man.
Yeah.
Where cool. Splinter, Krang's Too Realistic.
Yep.
Why is Megan Fox still doing these?
All those quotes.
Don't blame Josh Applebaum. Yeah. It's all in the book. Yeah, it's all in the book. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's awesome. Thank you so much for doing the show. Guys, of course, we love all of your support and all the positive reviews and stuff that helps the show in many, many ways. And, you know, when you support the sponsors that we have on the show, that helps the show as well.
And like, sometimes you can do that for free. Like Spearman it's free.
It's free. And it's a cool thing.
And they do watch to see how many people download it.
So they're noticing the reason they keep buying more ad time and stuff is because you guys
download, support it
and all that stuff. So you guys are awesome. Hope to see all of you at PodFest in September. Thanks again to our guest, Jensen Karp.
Bring your kilt.
Bring your kilt. Kilt party. Kilt it up at the Sofitel. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.
$300.